And welcome to the 302nd 302, 302nd show of your economic forum, entitled Money Matters, the original Money Matters since 2005. Thanks for joining me. My name is Mark Cunaberdy. Before we begin, remember discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your professional investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Past performance, no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk depending on types of investments. There may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Views expressed today are my opinions only, or the opinions of any guests or articles, authors that I may read or review. They may not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, Station, staff members, or underwriters. 302, today's show is called Coronavirus and Market Gyrations. Money Matters is always and every time about money. As money does matter and matters, money affects us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, controls our economy, our planet, our country, and some way or another controls very way we live our lives. It's about your money or lack of it, abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, this show is about you. So, we'll cover the coronavirus. I did not see the State of the Union address, but I saw clips of it when it came to the economy. So we're going to kind of go over some of the statements there. Not pros or con, but just go over what he claimed, you know. It's a money show. I'm going to say whether the things he said were true or not. Quote, our economy is the envy of the world, perhaps the greatest economy we've ever had in the history of our country. Okay, so the claim was the U.S. economy is on a historic high, perhaps the greatest it's ever been. Well, it's true the economy has been doing well. That is true. But there have been periods when it was even stronger. And the trade war with China, rising tensions in the Middle East, and fears over the health of the global economy have unsettled markets recently and led the U.S. Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, lower interest rates. Next, some of the best economic numbers our country has ever experienced are happening right now. That's from President Donald Trump. What do the figures show? The annual rate of growth in GDP, the value of goods and services, total value of goods and services in the economy, has generally been strong. For 2019, the data shows a 3.1% growth for the first quarter, but slowed to 2.1% in the second quarter, which ended in June of 18. This is significantly less than the 5.5% achieved in the second quarter of 2014 under the Obama administration. If you go a bit further back, there were times in the 1950s and 60s when GDP growth was even higher. If you choose to look at the health of the economy based on GDP, Mr. Trump's claims are suspect when compared to the national economic boom of the post-war years. So back, you know, when the war ended, it was really booming. So says Megan Black, assistant professor of history at the London School of Economics. I should have went there. I got a degree in economics in 1979, but I really kind of wish I went to the London School of Economics. Those guys knew their stuff. President Trump has also highlighted the rising value of U.S. financial markets, in particular the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which follows the shares of 30 major U.S. companies. Well, it is at new highs. It's true the Dow reached record highs under his administration. Trump supporters argue that his corporate tax cuts, along with his U.S.-focused policies, his clampdown on bureaucracy, and promises of infrastructure investment have all helped. However, in recent months, it has been a little volatile. Right, reflecting worries about trade confrontation with China, and of course, we have the coronavirus. Jobs and wages. He touts a lot of that in his speech to the UN General Assembly. Says, President Trump said, employment was at its lowest for half a century. He said that in the last 3 years, 6 million more Americans were now on the employment roll. Well, looking at a unemployment rate, percentage of the U.S. labor not in work from 2010 to 2020, we are almost at a low. 2010, it shows it under Obama at about 10%. of the percentage of U.S. labor force not in the workforce. Now it's at about 3.7. In August, the unemployment rate was 3.7. 50 years ago, in September 1969, the employment rate was the same at 3.7. But it did drop to 3.5 in November and December 69. So that is actually the lowest point for 50 years. But is definitely down there. As for the numbers in employment, it's true that over 6 million more jobs were recorded as employed August 2019 compared with August 2016, to 6 million more. So that's true. He also likes to highlight record low levels of unemployment among specific groups. Okay. Last month, he said, African-American, Hispanic-American, and Asian-American unemployment reached the lowest levels ever recorded. That is correct. By going by data from 1972 onwards, unemployment for African-Americans was at a record low in August at 5.5%. U.S. official data for Hispanic workers goes back to 1973, and in August this year, unemployment was at 4.2. That is also the lowest recorded level. For Asian Americans, records only go back to 2003. These show the unemployment rate last month was 2.8%, the lowest ever recorded. Actually, in June this year was 2.1%, but under his administration, he's got all three of those. President Trump also told the UN that wages are rising, incomes are soaring, quote unquote. That's actually not quite the whole story here. Average hourly earnings growth did continue through 2018, which is a general upward trend. But that began during the President Obama's administration. It reached 3.4% in February this year, but then began slowing and is now 3.23%. In real terms, after inflation is taken into account, wages increased by 1.5% between August 2018 and August 2019, according to official data by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Household income has also been growing, but the rate of increase slowed in the last few years, actually 2 years. In 2018, median household income was $63,179, which was unchanged from the previous year. This was reported to be the first year it had barely moved after 3 years of growth. So all in all, not a bad report card. Some of the things he said was not true, but, you know, that's how politicians do it. I think they all do that. So, you know, you tell me. There are many, many statistics that we can look at. What else do they have here? On factcheck.org, 2019 third quarter report. Consumer price index plus 5.2%. Handgun production down 23%. U.S. crude oil production plus 33%. Trade deficit plus 30%. Carbon dioxide emissions plus 0.9%. Manufacturing jobs plus 482,000. People without health insurance plus 1.9%. 1.9 million, excuse me. Home ownership pretty much flat. Home prices up 22%. Murders down 6.9%. Well, that generally follows unemployment, so that makes sense. Poverty rate 0.9% negative. S&P is up 30%. Job openings up 25%. Unemployment rate down 3.5%. Food stamp recipients down 15%. What else? Corporate profits plus 6.9%. U.S.-Mexican border apprehensions plus 92%. Whoa. Real weekly earnings plus 2.8%, economic growth 2%. So, there we go. Anyway, I didn't see the Democratic caucus either, so it's really not a political show, so it didn't surprise me, but it was interesting. Fewer people watched the State of the Union address this year than did last year. So, okay. So let's take a look at the Dow. New high, 29,362 on the Dow. And these big numbers, 29,000, 28,000, 27,000, are major resistance and support levels. So now that we are at 29,362, the major support level below us would be 29,000. Now, did have two nasty sell-offs about a week and a half ago, Monday down 600. And then yesterday, I think up 400. And so it's back out a new high but today, 29,362. Obviously, you know what's going on. Well, there, in my opinion, there are a variety of things going on. First of all, you know, the increase in the stock market has been relentless in the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months. Now, we covered the topic of the repurchase agreement, the repo market. Don't want to think I cover, I don't want to cover that again in detail. We already did that. But basically, when the Fed manufactures money and throws it into the banking system, it is juicing the repurchase agreement market, and that goes into large hedge funds and businesses and corporations. And they have been doing that since November, and they haven't done that since 08 and 09 up until last November, and they've been juicing it by, I think it's up to about $800 billion now. So goes the juice into the veins of the economy, so goes the stock market, so some people say. Fed say they're going to stop juicing it in April. So we'll see what happens. But this has been a very, very long run at a new high. You know, when he came into office 2016, President Trump, the Dow was sitting around 17,000 and some change. Today it's at 29,000. So keep in mind the Dow is only 30 stocks. So, but the rest of the indexes, S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, are also up. So what caused the halt or the delay as it fell a couple of weeks ago? Well, it's the fear of coronavirus. You know, some people say, and I kind of agree, this market was looking for a reason to sell off, to correct. It was looking for it. Now, what is, you know, the coronavirus? You know, what is that? So we're going to, I have some stats as of a few days ago, but we are going to look at some stats as a few days ago, and then we're going to look at some stats today. So let me see if I can get these up here, and then we'll look at what they were when I wrote an article on it and what they are today and see how it's grown. Okay. Okay. So the last virus, of course, you all remember Ebola. Okay. The Ebola virus. Okay. I guess we remember MRSA, the flesh-eating virus. And so Japan was the SARS virus. I mean, out of China was the SARS virus. Remember the SARS virus? Okay. So now we have the coronavirus. Now the SARS virus is a corona type virus. It's in the same family. Okay. So the last example we have of the SARS virus, okay? The SARS virus confirmed 8,098 confirmed cases with 774 deaths, okay? So that thing killed 774 people out of 8,098. So if we take our calculator, 774 divided by 8,098, the SARS virus had a kill rate of 9.5%. Yow. So what happened when the SARS virus hit, that the gross domestic product in China, that's the sum of all the goods and services, money transaction for all goods and services in China, fell about 1%, okay, in China. But the overall markets, the MSCI World Index for that year, stayed for that next 6 months after the SARS virus broke out, staged a 21.5% increase in the 6 months following. So China's GDP dropped 1% as a result of SARS, but the MSCI World Index, staged a gain of 21.56%. Now, we don't know. That's not to say cause of an effect. You know, just because we had SARS virus doesn't mean that the markets ran 21.56%. It said that it did, but we don't know why. So basically, you could say that the China SARS virus hit China 1% and didn't really affect the world's markets much because they gained 21%. Now, China today, SARS virus came out in 2003, spring. Okay, so now here we are, 17 years later. China has moved up to the second largest economy in the world. Okay, now, let's take a look at the coronavirus. Okay, now, I wrote this February 6th, right? Okay, I wrote this February. I wrote this February 4th. Okay? February 4th. February 4th. Okay. February 4th, the coronavirus now had 24,000 cases worldwide with 493 deaths. 24,000 cases worldwide, 493 deaths. That's a kill rate of 2%. 2%. So SARS was 9.5% kill rate, and this is 2%. So it's less deadly. There are 1,039 people that have recovered, and over 3,000 people are still in critical condition. Now, that was on the 4th. Today, as of yesterday, actually, I have the figures of yesterday. In one day, from the 4th to the 5th, the coronavirus infected 3,723 more people, 15%. 15%. Now, if you look at the percentage of increase since the beginning, which is when they started tracking it January 23rd, from the 23rd to the 24th, it was a 46% increase. 24th to the 25th, 55% increase in cases. And so we go from the 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th. So it was 46% when it started increase, 55% on the 24th, 54% on the 25th, 39% on the 26th, 63% on the 27th, 32% increase on the 28th, 29% increase on the 29th, and a 26% increase on the 30th. 31st, it was a 22% increase. February 1st, a 22% increase. February 2nd, 19% increase. February 3rd, 19% increase. February 4th, 19% increase. February 5th, yesterday, a 15% increase. So it went 46, 55, 40, 54, 39, 63, 32, 29, 26, 22, 22, 19, 19, 19, 15. So the spread is slowing. Okay? The spread is slowing. Daily cases. Well, you really want to look at the percentage, but the daily cases, you know, we're running February 1st, 2,600 daily cases, new cases. Second, 2,800. Third, 3,200. Fourth, 3,900. And the fifth, a little bit slower, 3,700 new cases. Now, there have been so far 28,379 confirmed cases and 566 deaths. So now we're going to do the new math. It was 2% a couple of days ago. So we go 556 divided by 28,379, and it's 1.9%. So it is getting a little bit lower. Been two deaths, as far as what I read. I think it was been two deaths. And two deaths outside of China. The rest have been in China. So, keep in mind, okay, that the flu, the regular flu during a flu season, okay, the regular flu, right? During 2018-2019 flu season, 61,200 people died worldwide. 61,200 died of the regular flu, okay? So when you look at, you know, the coronavirus, the difference is that the percentage of how many people it kills, okay? We had 61,000 people killed from the regular flu season, divided by 42 million people that actually got it, okay? And that is a kill rate of 0.00014, so it's less than 1/1000 of a percent. But look at the amount of people. So it's not so much of what the coronavirus will do, because today we're going to be looking at what the coronavirus could do to the markets, right? This is an economic show. Of course, our hearts and condolences go out to people that have passed for this disease. But what scares people is these viruses like SARS and Ebola and Corona. You know, the kill rates are much higher, you know, versus 1,000% versus 2%. And the SARS killed 9.5% of people infected, you know. It's about on par with the 1919 flu, the horrible epidemic that killed, I don't know, a lot. I think it was 60 million people that thing wiped out. But more people die during the regular flu season from flu, but more people get sick as well. So it's not so much how many people it would knock out, but it's the fear, right? If only let's say 100,000 people get sick, well, China's got, you know, a couple of billion people in it, so it's really not going to do much. But it's the fear. It's not so much the flu is going to wipe out a lot of consumers, but the fear of it is going to keep consumers home. Now, with the coronavirus making the mainstream news, of course, the market sold off. People believe that the market sold off 400 and then 600 points because of the scare, okay? Now, there are things going on. Airline flights to China have been canceled from some countries. You know, I was looking at going to Hong Kong in the summer. And, you know, flights were $1,200, $1,400. And I looked on flights 2 days ago. They were $174. And when I tried to book one, which I was fake booking it to see if I could get it, it said no flights going. So they've stopped it. They've picked up some sicknesses, coronaviruses on some cruise ships. And there have been cases outside of China, and 28 different countries are now infected. So let's see if we can get an update. And 28,379 and 3,863 are critical. So 14% are in critical condition. 566 have died now, and 1,431 have recovered. Okay, so there you go. Now, here are the countries that it's in, okay? China, there's 28,104 cases, okay? February 6th today, there's 86 more cases. 564 deaths, 3,859 people in critical condition. Japan has 45 cases. China's 28,000, Japan has 45. Singapore, 30. Thailand, 25. Hong Kong, 24 cases. South Korea, 23. Taiwan, 16. Australia, 15. Malaysia, 14. Germany, 13. Vietnam, 12. USA, 12. Macau, 10. France, 6. United Kingdom, 5. Canada, 5. Philippines, 3. India, 3. UK, 3. Italy, 2. Russia, 2. Finland, 1. Sweden, 1. Nepal, 1. Cambodia, 1. Sri Lanka, 1. Belgium, and Spain also won. Okay? Deaths. 564 in China, 1 in Thailand, and 1 in the Philippines. So nobody's died outside of those countries. Okay? And so really, out in China, I mean, that's, you know, the majority. 99% is all in China. Now, how does that affect us? Well, China has grown to the second largest economy in the world. So, first of all, China's GDP was going to be down because of tariff action by Washington. So that was the first go-around. China's economy is struggling. Okay. Now, this is the Lunar New Year. Okay, the Lunar New Year. It's a big celebration time for Chinese people. They travel and they spend money. Well, it's kind of couldn't have come at a worse time for them. They had the tariffs, and then they have the Lunar New Year. So what's happening is I've seen some photographs of the streets in some big cities, especially the originating city, that look like ghost towns. So it's usually massive travel and celebration and spending money, but many Chinese are apparently staying home in fear. So that's going to put a dent in consumer statistics. So tariffs already hit them, and now we've got this where big time would be spending. It's like if they had seen it for us. It's like if we'd seen a huge virus at Christmas to keep everybody home or in the summertime. So my take on this is that the actual effect from the coronavirus itself is going to be minimal. But the effect on the markets, I think right now, in my opinion, is not discounted enough. Because I think the GDP in China is going to get hurt. And, you know, there was a rumor yesterday where the market started to shoot up 400 points that there was perhaps a cure or a vaccination anyway in China. And we do see from the statistics I read off that the spread is slowing in percentages. The number of cases is up because of the number of, you know, the way the mechanics of a contagion works is that you get more and more people infected because more and more people are infected and they infect more and more people. It's kind of an exponential growth. I'm sure some of you have seen those terrible movies that kind of give projections of how things spread. First one people get it, then five get it, then 15 get it, then 100 get it, then 300 get it, then 1,000 get it. So the more people that are out there that have it, it spreads exponentially until it eventually slows like Ebola. It speeds up, then it reaches a peak, then it slows down. So we can say, that it is, percentage-wise, it is slowing. Percentage-wise, it is slowing. And some of the latest updates, kind of just curiosity updates. Dr. Li, L-I, the Chinese doctor who warned others to protect themselves from the disease, he died from the disease. There was one new case in England. A British national who contracted the virus from an Asian country, but not China. A new case in Germany's popped up in Bavaria, bringing the total there to 11. The wife of an employee of the company of the district of Starnberg and her two children tested positive. There's a new case in Australia, a 37-year-old Chinese woman, part of the tourist group that was placed in quarantine. And this is the fifth case in Queensland. Four other cases have been confirmed in Victoria and four in, and two in South Australia. 10 additional cases yesterday. 10 additional cases confirmed on board a cruise ship in Japan. And yesterday, three new coronavirus cases in South Korea. Two men traveled to Singapore for a conference. Four new cases confirmed in Singapore, including a six-month-old child of an infected couple themselves, and two cases in Malaysia. And one death reported from Tianjin, China. The patient had developed a fever and cough after shopping in a department store on January 22nd. Patient had a history of type 2 diabetes and hypertension. So percentage-wise, it's slowing. Now, I think, in my opinion, that we are going to see a slowdown in Chinese GDP and also exports. I know Disneyland closed a park over there, and there's a lot of... the airlines are not flying there. Cruise ships are probably going to be affected. There's a lot of technology companies that sell to China. And when everything is slowing down, you're going to see reduced demand. So I'm not quite sure that we've discounted this enough, in my opinion. Okay? I'm not quite sure that we've discounted this enough. It may take a while to show up. And if this thing doesn't slow down, then, of course, it's going to be, you know, there's more fear. So this is kind of a fear-based thing. But, you know, with the bright side for us, there's no deaths in the United States. I mean, we've got great medical care. And, you know, the only deaths we've seen is the Philippines and Hong Kong. Now, Hong Kong's got great medical care, so I'm not quite sure why somebody died there. It might have been an old person. Doesn't say. So I personally don't think the market has discounted it enough. This thing could get away from us. I don't know. And then, you know, all hell break loose in the markets. But again, that's an opinion if it breaks away. The percentages of spread is going down, so that's good. And I don't know if the notes that I read yesterday that the Chinese had developed or are developing some sort of vaccine. So we'll see. And see what happens. So as we mentioned, the corona is more virulent. It has infected more people than SARS. It's affected three times as many people than SARS did. But SARS was more deadly, killing a higher percentage of people. Now, that may be because advanced medicines and quarantine methods may be better now. But it also may be spreading more virulently, I think if that's the word for it, is because we have more travel now. So there's a lot of different, you know, things, a lot of currents, cross currents in this. I'm trying to get a hold on it. We could say that the coronavirus is more aggressive because it's infected more people, but it may just be because more people are traveling. The Chinese are traveling more. So we'll just have to keep an eye on it. If the Chinese economy does falter big time, it may certainly have more of an effect that is currently priced into the markets, in my opinion. If history is any guide, however, if history is any guide from previous viruses, if unless corona persists and is not contained, okay, then the markets, in my opinion, should be semi-unaffected. But if it persists and more cases pop up, you could see people starting staying home in other countries, and then you would have a kind of a worldwide slowdown. But keep in mind, no one can forecast market direction at any time, and I cannot either. But I can have an opinion of where I think the discounting of the market is, and I don't think it's discounted enough. But what do I know, right? Market's at a new high today. So we'll check the Dow today, being Thursday. Dow's up 89, 29, 379. Now, the biggest resistance point above us, the big number, is 30,000. Now, I had permission of regulators, and I've said this multiple times on the show, with the permission of the regulators, that like 2.5 years ago, I think it was, I said this market was going to 30,000. Now, that did not mean, and that was approved, that did not mean that was a fact. It was my opinion. But I did say that it could have fits and starts getting there. And indeed, the fall of 2018 was nasty. From October 1st to December 24th, that was a nasty correction. It was the worst correction we've seen since 08 and 09. That was a bled on, and there was contagion in the markets, not flu contagion. But stocks started to drop, and then utilities started to drop, and then junk bonds started to drop, and then junk started to, everything was dropping, and gold started to drop, and the only thing that held its own were U.S. Treasuries, because people have a tendency, not a prognostication, but a tendency to sell everything and go to U.S. Treasuries when things get really bad, okay? So we'll keep an eye on it and see. Right now, people are exuberant, as Alan Greenspan said around the dot-com bubble, in irrational exuberance. I don't know if I would say that, but one of the particular stock of an electric car company made the news a lot. This is the car company that makes very quick, fast electric cars. I'm sure you know who that is. And it had bottomed out recently, about a year ago, I think at around $180. And in the last week or so, it ran to, it was really running. It was like up 120, up 140. It was, it ran up to 900. Ken was like, oh, man. And so finally, 2 days ago, it finally halted. Yesterday, it finally stopped its ascent. And it went from 900 something. Let's see if I can find how high it did go. It went as high as, if my chart is reading it right, 961, and today's at 736. So we'll see what happened there. But that was, whew, man, watching that thing run was just beyond belief. I mean, it was just crazy. Some people had compared that run of that security, that stock, as compared to Bitcoin. Okay? Compared to Bitcoin. So some analysts were like, this is crazy. Became the second largest car company in the world by market capitalization. So, wow, right? So we'll see. Usually, when stocks run like that, it is called mania, you know? Vertical lines in stock prices are generally thought as bad, okay? I always say men don't get too fat, they keel over. Trees don't get too tall, they fall over. Like the big tree used to drive through, that finally came down. Unfortunately, I've never seen it, but the one you drove through and you know, that thing came down in a huge crash. Too many deer in the forest, and a virus will come through and kill them. Or you'll get an influx of predators. Too much downed wood or wood in the forest, and you'll eventually get a forest fire. So nature does not like things going out of its averages. And so when you see a stock price and where the line is vertical, straight up, running 5, 10, 12, 15% a day, it's only a matter of time before gravity takes hold. You know, there's an old saying, what goes up must come down. So the stock went to 961 and had an analyst come out and said, it's going to 7,000. Okay. So I did get a couple of calls from clients saying, where is a good buy? So I don't play in that market. That's just crazy. Just crazy. So one of the oldest and most widely watched stock index is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Called the Dow for short, or DJIA, is usually the symbol it is referred to as. The Dow, Dow 30. There are other tracked indexes reflecting a variety of marketplaces, such as the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, to name a few. But the Dow is usually what most people see on the news. Established in 1896, the Dow tracks only 30 stocks. Large, publicly owned companies trading on the New York Stock Exchange and in the NASDAQ. And it only tracks 30 stocks. The S&P tracks 500. S&P 500 tracks 500. Russell 2000 or whatever it is checks thousands of stocks. The Dow's name, Dow Jones Industrial Average, Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow's name is for short for Charles Dow, who created it in 1896, and his partner, Edward Jones. Hence the two words in the name, Dow and Jones. Charles Dow created the index to serve as a proxy for the overall U.S. economy. He created an index. Let's look at the 30 stocks, then that'll be a proxy for the U.S. economy. A stronger and growing economy would be reflected in a higher Dow number, and weakness could possibly cause a lower Dow. The initial index, the Dow, had 12 stocks in it, and it grew to 30 in 1928. The makeup of the Dow, the 30 stocks that are in it, I call them the component stocks, they can be changed from time to time, and the index has gone through about 51 changes since it was established. If a company becomes less relevant to the economy, or it has financial trouble, it can be removed from the index and replaced by another one. Apple didn't used to be in it, and now it is. GE was the last bastion, the last original stock, and it was removed in 2018, General Electric. Now, the way the Dow works is it's the higher a stock, a component stock price, the more weight it is given in the index. So a stock that has a price of $300 is given more weight than a stock that has a price of $10. But this results in the fact that a higher percentage move in a higher price component will have a greater impact on the final calculated value of the index. In other words, when the Dow 30 moves up, that doesn't mean the average of all 30 stocks are moving up. It means the biggest ones are moving up because they have the most effect on the index. Now, this the way they weight this is calculated different than other indexes, such as the S&P 500. Now, not to get too complicated, but just know that the Dow and the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 and the other indexes do not move in lockstep with each other. One might be up 3% and another one might be up 1% because of the way they're constructed and the companies that are in there move differently. Some interesting facts to the Dow is that March 15th, 1933, was the largest one-day percentage gain of 15.34%. 15.34%. Now, if the Dow moved today at 15.15%, right, it would move 4,500 points in one day. Well, it did move 15%. In 1933, on March 15th, it went from the Dow was at 8.26. Today is at 29,000. Back then, it was at 8.26. It moved to 62. No, it moved up 8.26 points and closed at 62. So it was sitting at 54 when it opened, and it went to 62, 15%. The largest one-day percentage drop, okay, the largest one-day percentage drop. Hold on a minute here. Getting a little bit of fuzzy background. There we go. The largest one-day percentage drop was October 19, 1987. That was known as Black Monday. The Dow fell 22.61%. So if it fell 22.61% today, it would fall 5,800 points. Wow. I remember that day. I was a stock trader. I lived in Green Bay, California, and watched the day unfold. Brokerage phone lines were jammed, and I executed a couple gold trades in the morning, phoned them in, and got through. They didn't get executed till hours later. Although only 30 stocks, the Dow 30 represents a pretty good cross-selection of industries to the overall economy. The Dow 30 stocks today, and I've abbreviated the names, but you'll recognize them. The Dow 30 today, and this is not a solicitation or recommendation to buy or sell any of these. But you could look up the Dow 30. I mean, they are 3M, American Express, Apple, Boeing, Caterpillar, Chevron, Cisco, Coke, Dow DuPont, ExxonMobil, Goldman Sachs, Home Depot, IBM, Intel, Johnson & Johnson, McDonald's, JP Morgan, Merck, Microsoft, Nike, Pfizer, Procter & Gamble, Travelers, United Healthcare, United Technologies, Verizon, Visa, Walmart, Walgreens, and Disney. 3M, they make the little stickers and everything else. American Express, Financial, Apple, of course, you know that they do. Boeing, aircraft, Caterpillar, construction equipment, Chevron, oil, Cisco, the internet, hardware, Coca-Cola, Dow DuPont Chemicals, ExxonMobil Oil, Goldman Sachs Financial, Home Depot, stuff. IBM, you know what they do. Intel, they make chips. Johnson & Johnson makes everything. McDonald's, JP Morgan Bank, Merck, drugs, Microsoft, you know what they do. Nike, clothing, Pfizer, drugs, Procter & Gamble, cleaners and everything else. Travelers, financial insurance, United Healthcare, United Technologies, materials, rockets, Verizon, of course, communications, Visa, Walmart, Walgreens, and Disney. You all know what they do. So that's a pretty good cross-section of industries represented, although because of how the Dow is constructed, the industries are not proportionally represented. Okay, so there may be more technology represented in there because Apple's price is so high, it gets a higher weight. Technology and industry used to be represented a little bit by GE, but GE was removed after a century. It was the last of the original 30 stocks. It's not possible to invest in one of these indexes directly, but you can purchase the stocks individually or maybe a representative fund. Since the names in the current Dow that I just read to you are most familiar to probably everyone out there, why they are in the index is not really hard to figure out. A solid cross-section of American business perhaps is represented in this index. And it's not too far of a stretch, even though it may not be proportional, and there may be some industries that aren't in there. I don't see any fast food. Well, I actually do see McDonald's. It's not too far of a stretch of an imagination to draw the conclusion that how the Dow goes, so goes at least a good part of the U.S. economy, which is why the index was constructed as a representative of the index. And then finally, Deutsche Bank AG last week warned investors the stock market is pricing at extreme levels and investors drive the Dow to new highs once again. Up from the mid-1700s in 2016, the Dow South sits now in the low 29,000s. And that's not far from the major milestone of 30,000. The multiples of 10,000s have only been reached twice before, right? When the Dow reached 10,000 and then reached 20,000. Closing in on 30,000 is indeed a major milestone. Deutsche strategists, these are names now, Parag Thate, Sunil Jalaghani, and Binky Chadra, wrote January 10th for Deutsche, quote, equity positioning, like the market itself, is run ahead of current growth as investors price in a global rebound. The market is, quote, now in this 96th percentile on our consolidated measure here at Deutsche, with a wide variety of metrics stretched. In plain English, Deutsch is saying prices are very high historically speaking, and a variety of measuring metrics are all above their averages to the upside. A variety, not all of them, but many of them. They've used the term all above their averages, but that is, I think that's a misnomer. The only time Deutsch metrics have been stretched farther was January of 2018, prior to a significant sell-off in the markets, according to these Deutsch strategists. They went on to note, quote, investors are clearly overweight, unquote, at the highest level since October 2018. October 1st, 2018 brought the start of the severe correction I mentioned, lasting until December 24th, 2018. It was the worst correction since 2008. And the economic real estate implosion that preceded it, which brought the world's financial systems to its knees. The S&P 500 had already gained 1.2% at the time that I wrote this, which was a week and a half ago, since January 1st, 2020, pushing new records almost daily. That followed an eye-popping 29% gain in 2019, its best performance since 2013. Coming out of the ashes of the 08-09 crash. Despite geopolitical concerns and impeachment proceedings, the market seemingly is in an almost relentless upward trajectory. Now we have the coronavirus, and it is still at a new high. Rumors of a soft patch caused minor gyrations in the markets throughout 2019, yet the indexes refused to not plow higher. Double negative. Deutsch strategist Chadra had been the most bullish of top strategists, tracked by Bloomberg, and his prediction of the S&P at 3265 compared to the actual level at 3231 at the end of 2019, he hit the mark almost exactly. Now Chadra is relatively bearish, negative on the markets, and calling for S&P level of 3250. S&P level at 3250, okay? And I will tell you that the S&P level today is 3345. So he's saying that it will end up at the end of the year 3250. Not that the 3250 level is catastrophic, far from it. It sits a little bit above that now. What he is saying is it won't end up any higher 12 months from now, and instead end up exactly where it kind of sits now. Kind of a slow grind to nowhere. But here are some caveats in mind when taking the Deutsche Bank observation to heart and selling out your portfolio. One, I keep saying no one can predict market movements with 100% accuracy. And history is full of analysts who got it right the first time around and were completely wrong on subsequent calls. Even the smartest quants, Harvard math geniuses hired by the best brokerage houses, employed by the largest financial firms, more often than not disagree on their prognostications. I could show you 100 articles that you have you convinced the Dow is going to 35,000, and I could show you 100 more which would have you quivering in fear of a Dow 10,000. The opinions are that varied. If you need reasons to doubt the Deutsch warning, there are many. The unemployment figures I just mentioned, disposable income figures I mentioned, the employment marker is tighter than it's been in years. Many companies are reporting better than expected earnings. Interest rates are historically very low. And the Federal Reserve is maintaining its accommodative monetary stance. And 2020 is the fourth year of the election cycle. Historically, the second best of the 4 years in the cycle. 2021 would be year one. The fourth year is the second best. Lastly, there are a few old sayings on Wall Street that may calm nervous investors. From the CEO of Citibank in 07, sorry. One day it will come to an end, but as long as the music is playing, you got to keep dancing. That and, quote, markets can stay logical much longer than you can stay liquid, meaning just because the market has been rising by a huge amount doesn't mean it can't keep going. And there have been those predicting this market would crash ever since its historic rise began in late 2016 and through other market super rallies. The bottom line is another old saying, it's not different this time. I better said, it is different this time, or it's different every time. That means there is no rule that says this market can't keep running and no rule that says it has to fall. At some point, all markets go through corrections, some severe, but with many economic statistics being more positive in decades, this market has many reasons it could keep going. That said, Nobody can prognosticate markets, and this is not a solicitation or a recommendation to do anything. That said, it is safe to say having good diversification in one's holdings, not going too far out on a stock limb, don't put money in there you can't afford to lose, and having some sort of exit strategy might be prudent in the face of this historic rise. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. It's time to close out the show. Okay, thank you for joining me. Our website, Agrata, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, moneymanagementradio.com. Nothing is charged for that. You can listen to old shows up there. And get some news and some other things there. We don't spam you or sell your addresses. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. The views expressed are my opinions only, or the opinions of any of the articles or guests I may have read or had in the studio at the time. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, and staff members or underwriters. My name is Mark Cunaberdi. God bless and have a great day.